Vanshakapati-rubhyascha-gripa-jandu-vai-bhuccha Pachitaram-pabhire-bhyo-vaishnavebhyo-namo-namah. Maharaj Prickett is hearing the pastimes, amazing pastimes, of Rishabdev, how he completely neglected his physical body and his subtle body, meaning the mind, etc. Why? To demonstrate how one can be fully self-satisfied on the spiritual soul platform, the platform of actually of the self, of who we are. That is the only platform on which we can become satisfied, in fact. In one sense, Krishna consciousness is very simple, and it's a process of removing all the different layers of falsity, of neurosis, of confusion, away, just removing them, cleansing them off of our true selves, chaito-dopinamajanam, cleansing the heart of all the falsity, all the pretension. What is the great pretension? The great pretension is that we are the center of existence. This is the great pretension, that we are the Lord, that things should be organized around our pleasure. And in case anyone hasn't noticed it yet, they are not organized around our pleasure. At least mine. Maybe yours, I don't know. No. No one. Because everything is actually organized by Krishna. And in the world, in the conditioned world, the world of conditioned souls, everyone is, as if they should be the centers, trying to organize everything around them, as if they were the star of the drama. But no one else is willing to accept this. And everyone is thinking that the drama is centered around them. But actually, it's completely centered around Krishna. We're unaware of it in our illusion, but it's completely centered around Krishna. He is the controller, He is the director, He is the creator. He's supplying us life, practically speaking. Practically speaking, we exist by the mercy of God only. And our existence continues. And also, this life is going to be destroyed by His energy too. The scientists may study aging until they age and die, but they'll never understand exactly how simple the process of aging is, and it's not possible to reverse it. It is just going on by the time factor, one of the energies of Krishna. So in any case, Rishadev Maharaj showed how it was impossible, or rather it was fully possible, to live on the soul platform and be ecstatic. So there were verses that Sukadeva Goswami recited to Prikshit Maharaj glorifying Rishabdev. And one of them, text 14 in chapter 6, was, "What shall I say of the dynasty of Priyavrata?" Because there was Priyavrata was the son of Uttanapad, the son of Swayambhuva Manu. And Priyavrata's son was Agnidra, and Agnidra's son was Nabi Maharaj, and Nabi Maharaj's son was Rishabdev. So Rishabdev Maharaj was in the dynasty of Priyavrata, and he glorified by his existence, by his presence in that dynasty, he glorified the dynasty of Priyavrata. So what shall I say of the dynasty of Priyavrata, which is pure and very much celebrated? In that dynasty, the Supreme Person, The original personality of God had descended as an incarnation and executed religious principles that could free one from the results of fruitive activities. So then, after reciting that verse and some other verses that we read yesterday, Sukadeva Goswami says to Maharaj Prickett, who was soon to die, this is text 18, he says, "My dear king, the Supreme Person, Mukunda, is actually the maintainer of all the members of the Pandava and Yadu dynasties. He is your spiritual master, worshipable deity, friend, and the director of your activities. To say nothing of this, he sometimes serves your family as a messenger or servant. This means he worked just as ordinary servants do. Those engaged in getting the Lord's favor attain liberation from the Lord very easily, but he does not very easily give the opportunity to render direct service unto him." Here is Prabhupada's purport. While instructing Maharaj Prickett, Sukadeva Goswami thought it wise to encourage the king, because the king might be thinking of the glorious position of various royal dynasties. Especially glorious is the dynasty of Priyavrata, in which the Supreme Lord Rishabdev incarnated. Similarly, the family of Uttanapad Maharaj, the father of Maharaj Dhruva, is also glorious due to King Prithu's taking birth in it. Prithu Maharaj was also an incarnation. The dynasty of Maharaj Raghu was glorified because Lord Ramachandra appeared in that family. As far as the Yadu and Kuru dynasties are concerned, they existed simultaneously at the same time. But of the two, the Yadu dynasty was more glorious due to the appearance of Lord Krishna, because Krishna appeared in the Yadu dynasty. So Sukadeva Goswami had glorified the dynasty of Priyavrata, and Maharaj Prickett may have been feeling some loss, that my dynasty, the Kuru dynasty, is unfortunate. Even though our dynasty appeared, was on the earth at the same time as the Yadu dynasty, and although they were intimately connected, Krishna did not take his birth in our dynasty, but rather he took his birth in the Yadu dynasty. So therefore he says, as far as the Yadu and Kuru dynasties are concerned, they existed simultaneously. But of the two, the Yadu dynasty was more glorious due to the appearance of Lord Krishna. So Maharaj Prickett may have been thinking that the Kuru dynasty was not as fortunate as the others because the Supreme Lord did not appear in that family, neither is Krishna, Lord Ramachandra, Lord Rishabdeva, or Maharaj Prithu. Therefore, Prickett Maharaj was encouraged by Sukadeva Goswami in this particular verse. The Kuru dynasty may be considered more glorious due to the presence of devotees like the five Pandavas, who rendered unalloyed devotional service. Although Lord Krishna did not appear in the Kuru dynasty, he was so obligated to the Pandavas' devotional service that he acted as a maintainer of the family and spiritual master of the Pandavas. Although he took birth in the Yadu dynasty, Lord Krishna was more affectionate to the Pandavas. By his actions, Lord Krishna proved that he was more inclined to the Kuru dynasty than the Yadu dynasty. Indeed, Lord Krishna, indebted to the Pandavas' devotional service, sometimes acted as their messenger, and he guided them through many dangerous situations. Therefore, Maharaj Prickett should not have been saddened because Lord Krishna did not appear in his family. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is always inclined towards his pure devotees, and by his action, it is clear that liberation is not very important for the devotees. Lord Krishna easily gives one liberation, but he does not so easily give one the facility to become a devotee. Muktim dadati karhi chit sma na bhakti yogam. It's the last line of the verse that we just read in the Sanskrit. Muktim dadati karhi chit, that he gives mukti, or liberation. Sma, He'll give it, certainly. But na bhakti yogam. He doesn't give his devotional service very easily. Because by that devotion that a devotee expresses towards Krishna, what happens? We see from the example of the glorious Pandava dynasty, who are Kurus, what happens is Krishna becomes subordinated. He becomes controlled by the love, by the devotion of his devotees. So he does not award that so easily. He'll give liberation. He'll give freedom from the material energy. But devotional service he holds very tightly because he himself becomes controlled by it. So directly or indirectly, it is proved that bhakti yoga is the basis for the supreme relationship with the Supreme Lord. It is far superior to liberation. For a pure devotee of the Lord, mukti is automatically attained. So he glorified, Sukadeva Goswami glorified the dynasty of the Yadavas, saying, of the Kurus, saying, your dynasty is so fortunate that Krishna would come and stay in your house. There's another verse in the seventh canto where Narada Muni says something similar to Maharaj Yudhisthira. Who can describe your fortune? Krishna comes in your house and stays there as if he's a family member. He's so attracted to the devotion, the loving service, the loving sentiments, the complete commitment to him, the Lord, that he comes and serves his devotees. He acts as the messenger of the Pandavas. He acts as the chariot driver of Arjuna. Senayoro biromadye stapam ratayame chuta. My dear Krishna, drive my chariot in the midst of the armies. And Krishna, just like a servant, says yes, and he does it. This is God, the supreme controller, becomes controlled by his devotees. So who is more fortunate than the devotees? So Sukadeva Goswami is pointing this out to Prichabhas to encourage him. And then the final verse of this chapter. And this verse, as Prabhupada explains in his, I'll read the purport, but he says in the first line of the purport, it's a summary. This verse 19 is a summary of the chapter, of what the essence of the chapter is, what are we meant to learn from the activities of Rishabhdev Maharaj. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Rishabhdev, was fully aware of his true identity. What was his identity? He knew that he was the Lord. Therefore he was self-sufficient, and he did not desire external gratification. There was no need for him to aspire for success, since he was complete in himself. Because he was performing so many incredible austerities. So when one performs austerities, what does that imply?
He wants something.
He wants something. So if one wants something, what does that imply? That he doesn't have something. And if one doesn't have something, what does that imply? That he's incomplete. So then one naturally wonders, well, if Rishabhdev Maharaj was the Lord, was he incomplete? And if he was incomplete, how could he be the Lord? By definition, the Lord is complete. Purnam. Om Purnam Madaha Purnam Idam. By definition, the Lord is complete. So if he's the Lord, why did he perform austerities? Not to gain something, there must have been another reason. So there was no need for him to aspire for success, since he was complete in himself. Those who unnecessarily engage in bodily conceptions means we have a conception of ourselves. When we think of who we are, We have so many upadis or identities that comes to mind. We think that we're, you can think of one, we think we're we're male or female, we think we're a certain age, we think we're from a certain country, we think we're... Yeah, you were thinking of an interesting one. It seemed like what?
We're something.
We think we are something. But what is that something? But we think... You mean more than we actually are?
Something.
Something wonderful. Yeah, we think we're special. We have all kinds of identities. We think we're funny. We think we're musicians. We think we're this. We think we're that. We're always trying to live up to those identities or those upadis that we impose upon, but we don't know who we actually are. Because everything connected to the body isn't actually us. So all the identities that we impose upon ourselves by our mental conception are all connected to the body. And they create this mood of bodily identification, creates an atmosphere of materialism. And these people are always ignorant of their real self-interest, because if you think that you're an intelligent person, for instance, then you think your self-interest is to use your intelligence in the service of your body and get yourself something substantial. As a product of your intelligence, if you think you're an Australian, naturally one will think that my business, if that's the prime element in his identity, he will serve his country. Feminists think they're women, at least the female feminists. Are there male feminists? There must be. Yeah, definitely. Yes, definitely. You know some of them. Yeah. So depending upon who we think we are, it defines our activities. If we think we're a member of a family, we have to deal with that family. We have so many responsibilities, services to perform to our family. So those type of bodily conceptions and false identities create an atmosphere of materialism, and those people are always ignorant of their real self-interest because they don't know their eternal souls. So if you don't know you're an eternal soul and you're thinking of so many other things, you're bound to be engaged in illusory activities. What is the activity of an eternal soul? That no one asks. Even in the different religions of the world, they don't say. They may think that we're eternal, but what is the activity of the soul in eternity? We see what the activity of the eternal soul in the material world is, but what is the activity of the soul in eternity? No one understands this. If you go to heaven, what do you do? What do you do there? Go shopping? Only there's that billboard up a while ago. So out of his causeless mercy, for these people who are ignorant of their own self-interest because of lack of knowledge of who they are, Lord Rishabhdev taught the self's real identity and the goal of life. So he taught that through his teachings. Tapo divyam putrakayena satvam shudyed yasmad brahma sokyam tvanantam. This is the purpose of life. To uncover our actual identity. So he taught this, and he showed how one can be satisfied, completely free from the bodily concept of life and on the soul platform. So therefore, he concludes the chapter saying, we therefore offer our respectful obeisances unto the Lord who appeared as Lord Rishabhdev, who taught us the goal of life. A knowledge of the self's real identity. Prabhupada's purport. This is the summary of this chapter in which the activities of Lord Rishabhdev are described. Being the Supreme Personality of Godhead Himself, Lord Rishabhdev is complete in Himself. We living entities, as parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord, should follow the instructions of Lord Rishabhdev and become self-sufficient. We should not create unnecessary demands due to the bodily conception. When one is self-realized, he is sufficiently satisfied due to being situated in his original spiritual position. So Rishabhdev Maharaj specifically demonstrated that, how to be satisfied on the soul level. As confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatman Asochati Nakankshati, this is the goal of all living entities. Even though one may be situated within this material world, he can become fully satisfied and devoid of hankering and devoid of lamentation simply by following the instructions of the Lord as set forth in Bhagavad Gita or Srimad Bhagavatam. Satisfaction through self-realization is called Sarupananda. The conditioned soul, eternally sleeping in darkness, does not understand his self-interest because he, due to his darkness, ignorance, he doesn't know who his self is. So if you don't know who the self is, then you don't know your self-interest, what's good for the self. He simply tries to become happy by making material adjustments. But this is impossible. It is therefore said in Srimad Bhagavatam, Nativadus Fatakatim Hivishnum. Due to gross ignorance, the conditioned soul does not know that his real self-interest is to take shelter at the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. To try to become happy by adjusting the material atmosphere is a useless endeavor. Indeed, it is impossible. By his personal behavior and instructions, Lord Rishabhdev enlightened the conditioned soul and showed him how to become self-sufficient in his spiritual identity. Thus in the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 5th canto, 6th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam entitled The Activities of Lord Rishabhdev. Mukti Sarupa Avastita. What's that verse? Surupena Avastiti. Yeah. I've heard Prabhupada say Avastiti recently. Is it Avastita or Avastiti? Anyway, you can look it up in folio or something. Yeah, I thought it was Avastita and I heard Prabhupada say Avastiti. So you can look and let me know, okay? Okay, next chapter, chapter 7. This is the activities of King Bharat. Who is King Bharat? Yes, eldest son, who the other sons were supposed to follow. Why were they supposed to follow him? And why did his father tell him to come to? Because? Yeah, very advanced, topmost. So now we're going to hear of Maharaj Bharat. Sukadeva Goswami continued. So from chapter 7 to 14, we'll hear about Bharat Maharaj. Sukadeva Goswami continued speaking to Maharaj Prickett. My dear King, Bharat Maharaj was a topmost devotee. Following the orders of his father, who had already decided to install him on the throne, he began to rule the earth accordingly. When Bharat Maharaj ruled the entire globe, he followed the orders of his father, and he married Panchajani, the daughter of Vishwarup. Just as the false ego creates the subtle sense objects, Maharaj Bharata created 5 sons in the womb of Panchajani, his wife. These sons were named Sumati, Rastrabrita, Sudarshan, Avaran, and Drumaketu. Formerly, this planet was known as Ajanab Varsha, but since Maharaj Bharat's name, since Maharaj Bharat's reign, it has become known as Bharat Varsha. So it was named Ajanab due to Rishabdev's father, Nabi Maharaj. But then it became known as Bharat Varsh. Maharaj Bharata was a very learned and experienced king on this earth. He perfectly ruled the citizens, being himself engaged in his own respective duties. Maharaj Bharata was as affectionate to the citizens as his father and grandfather had been, keeping them engaged in their occupational duties. In Varnashrama duties, he ruled the earth. With great faith, text 5, King Bharata performed various kinds of sacrifices. He performed the sacrifice known as Agnihotra, Darsha, Ponamas, Chaturmas, Pashuyagya, or a horse, an animal sacrifice, a horse's sacrifice, and Somajagya, where a kind of beverage is offered. Sometimes these sacrifices were performed completely and sometimes partially. In any case, in all the sacrifices, the regulations of Chaturhotra were strictly followed. In this way, Bharat Maharaj worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So there were many sacrifices performed by Bharat Maharaj. Now, in the previous canto, Narada Muni spoke to Prachini Barhishad against the performance of fruit of sacrifices. Now, these type of sacrifices are fruit of sacrifices. They're performed for the pleasure of demigods. Yet when Bharat Maharaj did it, as the last line of the verse explains, he worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Ije cha bhajavantam bhagavantam. He worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead through these very same sacrifices that were actually condemned, or are actually condemned as fruit of a karmakandic sacrifices. So that is the point that's going to be continued here, and we're going to hear how Maharaj Bharat did this. His consciousness was very special and wonderful. But before we speak about that point, Prabhupada explains in his purport that in this age of Kali Yuga, in the age in which we live, there is only one type of sacrifice that's recommended, and that sacrifice is Sankirtan, or the chanting of the Lord's names. So what does a sacrifice mean? What does it mean, a sacrifice? Giving up something to get something, right? So you're sacrificing something. You're giving up something for a particular purpose, and you're giving it for another's pleasure. Maybe not, but you're giving up something. So Prabhupada explains that sacrifice, when it's performed religiously, he doesn't exactly explain this point, but it is meant as an offering. Sacrifice is meant as an offering. It's a giving up something for the pleasure of the Lord. So the Sankirtan Jagya, or chanting Krishna's names, is an offering to Krishna for his pleasure, and therefore it's a sacrifice. So Prabhupada explains, in the absence of these, the sacrifices that were mentioned, the Sankirtan Jagya is recommended. Yagya Sankirtana Prayarya Jantihi Sumedasa. After all, sacrifices are executed to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So when we chant Hare Krishna, the proper way to chant is for Krishna's pleasure. Yagyarta, karma, such activities should be carried out for the Supreme Lord's pleasure. In this age of Kali, the Supreme Lord in his incarnation of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu should be worshipped with his associates by performance of Sankirtan Jagya, the congregational chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. This process is accepted by all intelligent men Yagyai Sankirtana Prayerya Jantihi Sumedasa. The word Sumedasa refers to intelligent men who possess very good brain substance. Translation of the text 6. So Maharaj Bharata was performing sacrifices. And usually these are fruitive sacrifices for the pleasure. They're according to the Vedas, and they are pleasure for the pleasure of the demigods. Text 6. After performing the preliminaries of various sacrifices, Maharaj Bharata offered the results in the name of religion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudev. In other words, he performed all the jagyas for the satisfaction of Lord Vasudev, Krishna. Maharaj Bharata thought that since the demigods were different parts of Vasudev's body, of the Lord's body, they were different functioning parts. It's how the demigods are, how the Lord functions within the universe, through them, his energy through them, his desire through them. So he thought that since the demigods were different parts of Vasudev's body, he, the Lord, controls those who are explained in the Vedic mantras. So when one is worshipping the demigods through the Vedic mantras, his understanding was they were just via medias to him, because the Lord was the source of their power. So although he was saying the mantras for the worship of the demigods, in his mind, he was worshipping the Supreme Lord. By thinking in this way, Maharaj Bharata was freed from all material contamination, such as attachment, lust, and greed. So he kept up his activities on the level of pure devotional service, even though superficially they were far less than that, but his mentality was pure, so his activities were pure. When the priests were about to offer the sacrificial ingredients into the fire, Maharaj Bharata expertly understood how the offering made to different demigods was simply an offering to the different limbs of the Lord. For instance, Indra is the arm of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Surya, the sun, is his eye. It's interesting when we think of the sun as Krishna's eye, as he explains it is in the Bhagavad Gita and here as well. Because that means that our eye, our seeing capacity, is dependent upon Krishna's seeing capacity, on his eye. Without his eye, the sun, without sunlight, we cannot see. So if we say, oh, yes we can, we can just turn on the light. But actually, where does the light come? Well, it comes from the bulb. Where does the... How does the bulb light up? It's from the electricity. And where does the electricity come from? It comes from some fuel. And where does the fuel come from? It's basically just stored solar energy, whether the fuel is wood, coal, or petroleum. So it is due to the sun's potency, which is due to Krishna's potency, that we can see. So Indra is the arm of the Supreme Lord. This is how he was seeing. Surya, his eye. Thus Maharaj Bharata considered that the oblations offered to different demigods were actually offered into the different limbs of Vasudev. So Prabhupada, in his purport, explains how the order... I'll read. The Supreme Personality of Godhead says that as long as one does not develop the pure devotional service of Shravanam Kirtanam, hearing and chanting, one must carry out his prescribed duties. Since Bharata Maharaj was a great devotee, one may ask why he performed so many sacrifices that are actually meant for kamis, not for devotees, for fruitive workers. The fact is that he was simply following the orders of Vasudev, the Lord. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Savadamam Pratyaja Mamekam Sharanam Braja. Abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. Whatever we do, we should constantly remember Vasudeva, or God, or Krishna. People are generally addicted to offering obeisances to various demigods. It's So in our culture, we don't offer obeisances to demigods, but to what is a demigod? A person more, a powerful person. So everyone is respecting powerful people, whether it's their sports heroes or rock heroes, or no one has political heroes anymore. Well, I guess they do, but not so much in the West. Everyone has their heroes. So Bharat Maharaj simply wanted to please Lord Vasudev. He was his worshipable deity, the Lord. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, Bhoktiram Jagatapasam Savaloka Maheshwaram. A jagya, a sacrifice, may be carried out to satisfy a particular demigod, but when the jagya is offered to the jagya purusha, Narayan, the Lord, the demigods are satisfied. The purpose of performing different jagyas or sacrifices is to satisfy the Supreme Lord. One may perform them in the name of different demigods or directly. If we offer oblations to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the demigods are automatically satisfied. If we offer the root of, if we water the root of a tree, the branches, twigs, fruits, and flowers are automatically satisfied. When one offers sacrifices to different demigods, one should remember that the demigods are simply parts of the body of the Supreme. If we worship the hand of a person, we intend to satisfy the person himself. How do we worship somebody's hand?
Kiss it.
Or massage it. Another way. You must have been a British nobleman in your past life. Days long gone. If we massage a person's legs, we do not really serve the legs, but the person who possesses the legs. All the demigods are different parts of the Lord, and if we offer service to them, we actually serve the Lord himself. Demigod worship is mentioned in Brahma Samhita, but actually the slokas advocate worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So if one works for Krishna and acts to satisfy Krishna, then the result is pure and freedom. And if one tries to gain anything for himself, even through worship of the demigods, then the result is bondage. So Bharat Maharaj was fixed in this understanding that the purpose of his existence was to worship the Lord. And he did it through something that superficially appeared fruitive, but he was in his consciousness, because it's the consciousness that's important in all activities. It's how one is perceiving things that's really the important factor. So he was perceiving everything as Krishna's energy, and therefore his worship of Krishna through that sacrifice was perfect. Text 7. In this way, being purified by ritualistic sacrifices, so it's so interesting that others perform ritualistic sacrifices and became contaminated. And Narada Muni had to stop them, cut it. But when Bharat Maharaj did it, because his consciousness was right, he was purified. His heart of Maharaj Bharat was completely uncontaminated. His devotional service unto Vasudev, Lord Krishna, increased day after day. Lord Krishna, the son of Vasudev, is the original personality of Godhead, manifest as the Supersoul, Paramatma, as well as the impersonal Brahman. Yogis meditate upon the localized Paramatma situated in the heart. Jnanis worship the impersonal Brahman as the Supreme Absolute Truth. And devotees worship Vasudev, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose transcendental body is described in the Shastras. His body, the Lord's body, is decorated with the Srivats, like a stuba jewel and a flower garland. And his hands hold a conch shell, disc, club, and lotus flower. Devotees like Narada always think of him within their hearts. So there's this one, there's one truth, and that absolute truth, Advaita Jnana, it is non-dual. There is nothing, there is only one truth, but it is appreciated in different ways depending upon how one views that truth. That's like if we look at the hills, what direction are the hills in? Northeast or something? Northeast. If we look to the northeast, we see the hills. So from the distance, at least I sometimes, when I see them, I think that, oh, there's some clouds there. From the distance, it may look like one thing or another. It may look like clouds. And then one gets closer to the hills and one sees, indeed, they are hills. And then one gets still closer and one sees that there's variety. There's trees and houses and roads on the hills. But from the distance, it looks like clouds. There's only one substance there, but it's perceived differently according to our relationship, the distance or proximity of ourselves in relationship to that one substance. So one person may say, oh, look at those clouds over here. Now, that's not clouds, that's a hill. No, those are forests. And they may even argue about it, but it's only one substance, just looked at from different perspectives. So the devotees get the most intimate, due to their loving devotion, they get the most intimate perspective on that Advaita Tattva, on that absolute truth, that non-dual absolute truth. So the devotees think of him always in his most attractive feature within their hearts. And then the yogis see him in his forearm form in their hearts. And the jnanis, the meditators and speculators, they see him as impersonal and oneness. The same absolute truth. The same source of everything. The same Lord. But according to the perception of the viewer and qualification and proximity, is perceived differently. So Maharaj Bharat, he worshipped the Supreme Lord in this way. And his heart became completely purified. Again, even though he was performing an activity that others may be performing and it would entangle them in the material world, but he became purified. Destiny, text 8. Fixed the time for Maharaj Bharat's enjoyment of material opulence at 1,000 times 10,000 years. So what's 1,000 times 10,000? 7 zeros there, I think. Huh? Huh? 7 zeros, 10 million, yes. When that period was finished, he retired from family life and divided the wealth he had received from his forefathers amongst his sons. He left his paternal home, the reservoir of all opulence, and started for Pulaha Ashram, which is situated in Haridwar. The Shalagram Shilas are obtainable there. At Pulaha Ashram, so that's by the Gandaki. We'll hear about that later. It's by the Gandaki River. It's actually far above Haridwar at this point. I don't know where it comes down to, but I know it's also in Nepal. At Pulaha Ashram, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, out of his transcendental affection for his devotees, becomes visible to the devotees, satisfying the devotees' hearts. So there are deities there. In Pulaha Ashram is the Gandaki River, which is the best of all rivers. So high in the Himalayan mountains, at this very holy place, there is holy rivers. And this holy river, the Gandaki River, is the place where the Shalagram Shilas come from. Very amazing, what do you call them, rocks. And they're carved out inside. Prabhupada calls them here the Shalagram Shilas, the marble pebbles. Purify all those places. On each and every marble pebble, at each of these rocks, they have holes in them, and they're carved out inside in amazing ways, in different forms. On each and every marble pebble, up and down, circles like navels are visible. Who has a Shalagram Shila? Anyone in? No one in Perth. Nitai, do you have any Shalagram Shilas? Amazing. Shalagram Shilas are amazing. They're already the Lord. They don't need to be installed or anything. In the gardens of Pulaha Ashram, Maharaj Bharat lived alone and collected. So he renounced. He too renounced everything. Gave up his kingdom and went to Pulaha Ashram. He gave up his wife, his opulences, etc., and went to this ashram. He lived alone. Now how did he live? How could you live up in a lonely forest place in the Himalayan mountains? He collected a variety of flowers, twigs, and tulsi leaves. He also collected water of the Gandaki River, as well as various roots, fruits, and bulbs. With these, he offered food to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudev. And worshipping him, he remained satisfied. In this way, his heart was completely uncontaminated, and he did not have the least desire for material enjoyment. Because all the desires are in our heart due to dissatisfactions. So we have so many desires, hoping that only if I get this, then I'll be happy. Through purity, not through trying to satisfy the desires, one becomes happy. So he was completely satisfied in this very, very simple way, because his heart was completely pure in this holy place. He remained satisfied. In this way, his heart was completely uncontaminated, and he did not have the least desire for material enjoyment. All material desires vanished. In this steady position, he felt full satisfaction and was situated in devotional service. Prabhupada's purport. Everyone is searching after peace of mind. So he felt that when one has a peaceful mind, one is happy in whatever situation one's in. If one doesn't have a peaceful mind, one's unhappy and not satisfied in whatever situation one's in. So this is obtainable. Peace of mind is obtainable only when one is completely free from the desire for material sense gratification and is engaged in the devotional service of the Lord. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Patram Pushpam Param Toyam Yome Bhakta Prayachati. Worship of the Lord is not at all expensive. One can offer the Lord a leaf, a flower, a little fruit, and some water. The Supreme Lord accepts these offerings when they are offered with love and devotion. In this way, one can become freed from material desires. As long as one maintains material desires, he cannot be happy. As soon as one engages in the devotional service of the Lord, his mind is purified of all material desires, then one becomes fully satisfied. Savai pung sam paradama o yati bhaktir hoksade hai tikiya patiyataya yapma supasidati. Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Gyaniyatiyasu Vairagyam Gyanam Chayadahaitukam. The supreme occupation, dharma, for all humanity is that by which men can attain to loving devotional service unto the transcendent Lord. Such devotional service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted in order to completely satisfy the self. By rendering devotional service unto the personality of Godhead Sri Krishna, one immediately acquires causeless knowledge and detachment from the world. These are the instructions given in Srimad Bhagavatam, the supreme Vedic literature. One may not be able to go to Pulaha Ashram, but wherever one is, one can happily render devotional service to the Lord by adopting the process mentioned above. Text 12. That most exalted devotee, Bharat Maharaj, in this way engaged constantly in the devotional service of the Lord. So he was in such a simple setting. These Himalayan mountains, there's no material facilities there. There's just what nature offers. So he was offering that with a pure heart, the roots, the flowers, the fruits, the water that he could find. He offered everything with great love to the Lord. So he was constantly engaged in the devotional service of the Lord. Naturally, his love for Vasudev, Krishna, increased more and more and melted his heart. Consequently, he gradually lost all attachment for regulative duties. The hairs of his body stood on end, and all the ecstatic bodily symptoms were manifest. Tears flowed from his eyes, so much so that he could not see anything due to his ecstatic love. Thus he constantly meditated on the reddish lotus feet of the Lord. At that time, his heart, which was like a lake, was filled with the water of ecstatic love. When his mind was immersed in that lake, he even forgot the regulative service to the Lord. Maharaj Bharata appeared very beautiful. He had a wealth of curly hair on his head, which was wet from bathing three times daily. He dressed in a deer skin. He worshipped Lord Narayan, whose body was composed of golden effulgence and who resided within the sun. Maharaj Bharat worshipped Lord Narayan by chanting the hymns given in the Rig Veda, and he recited the following verse as the sun rose. And here's the verse that he worshipped the Lord as the sun god. Again, he was worshipping the Supreme Lord in his worship of the sun. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, this is the verse he would chant, Paro Raja Savita Jatavedo Devasya Bhago Manasedam Jajana Sore Tasada Punavisha Chaste Hamsas Gridranam Rishad Rijiram Imam. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is situated in pure goodness. He illuminates the entire universe and bestows all benedictions upon his devotees. The Lord has created this universe from his own spiritual potency. According to his desire, the Lord entered this universe as the Supersoul, and by virtue of his different potencies, he is maintaining all living entities desiring material enjoyment. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the Lord, who is the giver of intelligence. So he was worshipping the Lord and was ecstatic. Okay, we'll stop here. And tomorrow we'll hear about what the amazing occurrences that came to Bharat Maharaj. Thank you very much. Any questions or comments? Yes.
You're talking about that we cannot be happy unless there is peace of mind. You said in order to have peace of mind, one must do something else.
You'd like to know what it is, huh?
Yeah.
It's that we have to become devoted to Krishna. But not externally. But truly, that means fully dependent upon Him, fully accepting His mercy, fully surrendered to Him, and fully developing a love for Him, gratitude. Yes.
Someone could argue that externally.
Yeah.
The reason someone is surrendering externally is because they're obviously it's some internal. Or else why would they be doing that?
Yeah.
Doing something else?
Yes. One won't be able to continue unless the internal is developing. But it's a matter of degree, isn't it? In other words, when the devotion is pure, it's pure. When the surrender is full, it's pure. So we may be going on and it's not yet at that level. When it's at that level, when it's pure, completely giving ourselves to Krishna and placing ourselves in His hand, having no other desires, then the fruit of the service, of the devotional service, becomes complete. Is that something like the point you were trying to ask about? Yeah, I was reading that in the verse. There's probably a technical answer to that. That there's a way of performing sacrifices partially and maybe getting some benefit in that and not, but I don't know it. Do you know it? Anyone know? It's something technical though. Why? English nobleman?
Yeah.
How many do you know?
No, but historically speaking.
Oh, those guys. All the things they did. Well, some of them might have been noblemen.
Yeah. They could have been young.
Well, I find an example of English nobleman.
We have two of them, I think. Not only one from South London and one from North London. But actually, just see what it means. Just the term, a nobleman, it means a noble man. So if someone is noble, they're wonderful. But then when it becomes just the externals, and one is noble in name only, then it doesn't work. But we should all become noble men and noble women.
In the countryside in England, they speak like, "Oi be from the cowfields, oi be."
That doesn't sound very noble at all.
Where I live, it's there's not really many noblemen there.
We know how the noblemen speak. Oh, say, old chap.
Yes.
And they sort of look like camels.
Yeah,
Yes. And we know what camels were in their last lives. British noblemen. Yes. Quite. Okay. Yes.
Text 7. I'm not going to four hands which hold four symbolic weapons. Why it's accepted those flowers?
Generally, the lotus flower is not considered a weapon. From the devotee point of view, Or rather, the way it's usually explained is there's two weapons which are meant for the non-devotees and two things, the conch and the lotus, which are meant for the devotees, and the disc and the mace are meant for the non-devotees. Now why?
Because we can admit that the sound is used.
Huh?
Can be used in new directions.
The lotus flower, yes.
The lotus flower.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
Lord Balaram killed Ramahosan with a blade of grass. So
also,
if the ward wants to wait a second, you can wait for the silly comment after. Yeah, anything, because it's no different from him, so we can do anything with it. But generally speaking, they're not usually considered weapons. I'm not exactly sure why Prabhupada translated in that way. This was at 7? Weapons, because they're symbolic weapons, because they remove the illusion from the hearts of the living entity where they appear. So in that sense, it fights Maya. So in that sense, they can be thought of as weapons. Srimad Bhagavatam. Oh no, again.
He's saying this lotus flower soup as well.
Yes. I could have predicted that almost. But I couldn't have said it with that kind of British accent that you said that they talk in the countryside. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Bharat Raj ki jai. Rishabdev Maharaj ki jai. Gopinanda.